to order the Port Commission of the Port Authority. It is 9:05 on November the 13th. Chairman Longoria was called away just at the last moment, so I'll be sitting in for her today, and we have a couple of agendas to go through. We'll start with the Port Authority agenda. I've done the call to order. I don't have any opening remarks from the chairman. Are there any appearances this morning?
Not aware of any.
Okay, we'll move on then to agenda item D1, consideration and possible action regarding the proposed fiscal year 2019 operating and capital budget. And I see we have someone positioned at the other end who's going to get us through this agenda item.
Thank you, Commissioner. Excuse me. Good morning. Good to be with you. Thank you for your time today to the commissioners and staff, and we have some guests with us as well. Thank you for being here today. An important day as we look into 2019 to set our operating and capital budget. I'll refer as we go through to the page numbers on the lower right. You'll see those. I'll try to remember to click slides appropriately. Just a few opening comments to set the stage. On the second bullet, a reminder for those that may not be aware, our operating budget does not include the tax receipts that we receive from Harris County. Those are used exclusively for debt service. So all you see within the operating capital budget are the monetary implications of running the enterprise, running the business. So no tax dollars are included. The third bullet down, a reminder that all and each individual and capital project of $50,000 or more will be brought back to the full commission for award. That's not to say that we don't pay a lot of attention to those less than 50. They go through a lot of vetting before those are approved at Rogers level and Tom's. And then lastly, as I refer to 2018 reforecast, that is the mid-year update that we do to the financial expectations for 2018. So when I refer to 2018, it's our latest estimate of how we will land. Okay, a lot of words, perhaps too many on slide number 3. What you'll see in this budget this year is growth in our operating revenues of 8% versus where we expect to land for 2018. Clearly, containers, as you'll see in a few slides, drive the majority of that. They're about 78% of our revenues, and they're growing around 10% from 2018 into 2019. Obviously, on the continued strength of import loads, but we're seeing the beginning of the export of resin production benefiting us as well. Operating expenses, those are total operating expenses, growing 8% as well. And I'll weave that through the story as we go, matching our revenue growth with our expense growth in order to maintain good cash generated for the business and for our capital plan. So 8% growth on expenses. Operating income dollars up 7%. The italics are important, which is we are running at 25-point profitability margin in the enterprise, in the business, and that is roughly flat to what we expect 2018 to be. That's a very, very rich earnings, quote-unquote, rate, and we're pleased to show that again for 2019. Cash flows, the fourth bullet down, total cash flow of around 171, operating cash flow of $172 million expected for 2019. We are putting forth 33 new positions for 2019, the bulk of those in operations and specifically within the maintenance categories as we look to provide capacity for our customers and have the capacity in place in time to attract new services. All that comes with additional headcount to run the business. And again, reference the fact that expenses are growing in line with revenue. So that's an affordability check that we do with regards to headcount.
What's the PSEO?
Port Security Emergency Operations.
Emergency Operations. There you go, Commissioner.
Boy, he's keeping a low profile, isn't he?
Yeah.
Thought you'd get that through, did
you? Yeah, nice try there, Marcus. PSEO. And I can talk to those headcount. We actually have a headcount slide coming up. $287 million of capital plan, largely focused, as you would imagine, on the container terminals. Around 90% of the plan reflected in Bayport and Barbers Cut as we continue to add capacity again, to grow that business in the next 5 to 10 years. And lastly, as we mentioned in the July workshop, we are continue to project sufficient liquidity to fund our capital plan for the next 5 and 10 years, absent any major Houston Ship Channel widening and deepening projects. So liquidity looks good as well. So that's a relatively brief narrative to begin. Page 4, a graphical view of the income statement. Perhaps this is easier to digest. The gray bars you see are the revenue for 2017, 2018, where we expect to land at $380 million. And I will pause for a minute on 2019. This is the first time, obviously, that we will have crossed the $400 million mark in the history of the port. I mentioned to Tom and Roger that in the year 2000, we crossed $100 million. And in the year 2011, we crossed $200 million. 6 years later, 300, but now it's only 2 years between 300 and 400. So that steep curve, given the volume growth that we've seen in the container business, is really quite impressive. So we were just crossed 300 million in 2017. We'll cross 400 million projected in 2019. So we're pleased with that.
If you just also say what that growth really is. Result of?
That's the result of the container growth. Import
the Panama Canal have anything to do with it?
Trans-Pacific service growth coming in.
The resin.
All water services. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So that's excellent growth.
It's fantastic. Double-digit growth over the last 3 years in the container business, and that's what is driving that revenue. Absolutely. So then I'll skip to the green bars there, which are the net total cash flow generated by the business. And you can see good growth in 2018. A lot of that is, again, because of significant growth in import loads. We're tampering that growth just a bit into 2019, so it's a little bit less aggressive. But as I mentioned, $171 million of total cash flow. Okay, we'll move to look at cargo briefly on slide 5. On the left are the containers that we referenced from 17 into 18. As I mentioned, double-digit growth, about 11% in container units. From 2018, where we expect to land at 2019, we have a 9% growth in container units projected. You see below in the notes, that's composed of a 12% gain in export loads and 8% growth in import loads. So that weights to about a 9% growth. So again, still a very positive number, coming down a little bit from what we've done from 17 to 18, but it is a challenge and represents a good target for Mr. Davis and company to execute.
Tim, in terms of the container growth, have we made any allowances for the possibility of how these tariffs may affect the overall growth in the container?
Yeah, I mean, that's a concern. I just went on last month, went to Asia, talking to the Asian carriers. You know, it continues to be robust through the end of the year. It's mm-hmm. kind of unknown on that sector from China. That right. is a percentage of our business. You know, in the scheme of things, it's a big growth, but there may be a downturn in imports from Asia. Mm-hmm. As far as exports, you know, some of the petrochemical product, the polyethylenes and stuff that were planned to go to Asia, there's a tariff on that commodity now. Although the producers are saying, hey, we're still going to produce, and it's going to go somewhere. It may not go to China. It's going to go to, you know, South America or Europe or somewhere. They're going to continue to produce. It's a concern, but there hadn't been any indication yet. Mm-hmm. In fact, the last thing that I've been reading before that, you know, it's still continued to be strong through the Chinese New Year's through January. So there's always, you know, those risks right. of growth. But
well, I know with our growth trajectory as it relates to the Asian business, you know, it seems like that would be where, you know, we may have the biggest issue.
Yes, but it's, the growth to the United States could go down, but if our ships remain full, if they continue to, you know, to fill our ships into Houston, you know, the decline could be like on the West Coast or the East Coast or whatever. Yeah. So it's a factor. I mean, it could be or whatever, and I think this is a pretty aggressive growth. But also, you have to consider we've had some recent services that started midpoint this year. Some of the Indian services, or I think the Indus service, that are going to that only started coming in the halfway point of this year. So that's going to continue to grow as well. So it's not just China. I mean, it's a big part of our growth, but it's not going to all go away.
We're unique in the sense that we're diverse in our trade portfolio. Unlike West Coast ports that are really reliant on trans-Pacific trade, we're pretty evenly split between North-South, Transatlantic, and Trans-Pacific. So any kind of a tariff dispute, I think we're faring a little better than some other ports that are kind of lopsided in that market.
So we have some insulation.
We have a little insulation, yes.
Right. Very good. Thank you, Commissioner. The right side of this chart speaks to steel. You see the tremendous growth that we've experienced, largely on import steel, of course. 17 to 18 is about a 22% growth rate. Again, we cut that back a bit to 11%, nonetheless still an aggressive growth plan, up to 4.9 million tons expected in 2019. As the footnote indicates, the overall greater Port of Houston is relatively flat, but we have been able to gain share, in other words, take steel from other docks, if you will, whether that's other services, other customers moving their volume to us, what have you. So that is what is continuing that growth into 2019. Okay, page six, a few other cargo slides. Total autos on the left. You can see a decrease expected. That is largely here at the Turning Basin as that customer continues to refine their business model. There is some additional cargo coming via rail as opposed to via ocean-going vessel and some other issues. So that's coming down a bit. Not a tremendous impact, of course, on the financials, but a visible commodity for us nonetheless. Then on the right side, other general cargoes, you can see composed of a variety of things, a slight increase, again, expected into 2019. Okay, page seven now, we will do a little bit of dive into revenue on pages seven and eight. And what you're looking at on the left is the $380 million, which grew 9% over 17. So $380 million for 2018. Growing to $400 million, $404 million in 2019. And on the right, the verbiage is a walkthrough, if you will, from 2018 down to 2019. So beginning at 380, you can see clearly the big driver there, $27 million increase from 18 to 19 in our container revenues. As we mentioned, that's driven by the growth in export loads, double digits, and then the import loads continuing to grow about 8%. So clearly, the container revenues are driving the bulk of that. Turning Basin is up a bit. That's sort of half and half. About half of that driven by cargoes. We saw steel and some other general cargoes driving that. The other half being the rental properties that are on terminal and some new lease arrangements that we have in 2018 that will be beneficial to us in 2019. So that's what's driving the growth in the Turning Basin.
Is that a decrease in?
The third row is, Commissioner, the decrease in lease revenue is the minus two. Mm-hmm. But the one above that for the Turning Basin, that's an increase of two. Then the next row are leases off terminal. So those that are outside the fences, if you will, are not water-facing leases. This is what RD brings to this body frequently. There are a number of leases that will expire in 2018. There are three rather large leases that will terminate in 2018. Mm-hmm. And somewhat conservatively, we didn't backfill those with a projected new lease. So that money will come back to us because obviously RD and John Mosley are out, you know, driving business to backfill those. But conservatively, if you will, that lease terminated, so we took it out of the plan for 2019.
So you didn't book it because it hadn't been
correct.
We don't have it. All right. We didn't make the assumption because we didn't have the lease in hand.
Right.
So.
The next row down, which is the fourth bullet, is channel development. And as you're aware of the new barge fleeting program, with regards to channel development and DMA fees, as you may have known, and Mark, you can certainly chip in here if I blow this. With some change in the Corps' rules with regards to maintenance material and the cost to place maintenance material in our disposal areas being a much lower rate than what we had charged previously, we have a number of customers coming to us in the pipeline already, if you will, to place their material in our disposal areas. Hence that increase in revenue expected for next year. I believe Gary McMahon, who's spoken to this body before, so I think he has five or six people that are talking to us now about bringing material in. So that's fantastic to make use of that capacity. The lowest item, the $5 million decrease is, again, this is non-operating, so this is the difference between operating and total, but this non-operating is almost entirely, in fact, $4 million of that five is an expected decrease in interest income. That's largely because as we execute our capital plan, our cash investments begin to wane or begin to come down a bit, it will simply generate less interest income. And that's what you're seeing in that $5 million decrease for next year. So that gets us to $400 million of revenue. The next slide is rather busy. Really, I'd like you just to look at the pie, if you would. So this is talking to the mix of business for 2019. And I'll talk through the container, obviously, the big blue of the pie. So what that's telling you is that containers represent 78% of our total revenues, and it is up 10% versus 2018. So container, 78% of total, up 10%, that little plus sign, up 10% for 2019. You can stay in that concept. Go to the left, Turning Basin, 14% of our total revenues come from the Turning Basin. And as I mentioned previously, up about 2% year over year. The lease, which again is what we just talked about the three large leases that we've not backfilled, 4% of our total, and it's down 12%. And then all other pieces of revenue also 4% and down 12%. So it's just a way to look and engage that portfolio, that contribution of revenues to our overall revenue stream. Page 9 then, a similar look as we talk about expenses. So similar bridge from 2018 expenses of $282 million, that's total expenses, up to $307 million expected for 2019. And then the right, of course, again, are the various talking points to take you from A to B. The biggest piece, of course, being PHA and ILA labor of $9 million. Honestly, the ILA should perhaps be first. That's about $5 million of that $9 million coming in the form of ILA labor, which again trends with volume. More boxes, more movements, obviously results in incremental ILA labor and benefit cost. The PHA cost ties to the approved headcount that we mentioned earlier and filling those positions. Depreciation and amortization growing by $5 million. That relates to capital projects that this body would have awarded in the last year or so. Obviously, primarily at the container terminals, but that's up by $5 million. We have a contribution to local and state agencies. This is a placeholder for a contribution related to Port Road Phase 3 that we would make and would be expensed in our income statement next year. I think that program is still being sorted out, some of the particulars and T's and C's, but should it happen, we have that comprehended in the budget for next year. And that's all within the operating section, up in gross margin, if you will. Now, if we look at overhead spending, the changes in G&A, personnel, salaries, and benefits, this is again filling the open positions that we have and the handful of new positions that we have in G&A. Fees and services, largely about the cybersecurity program. There's an environmental emissions waste project looking at next year, some software licensing fees, other items for $2 million. Building related and other, around half of that, about $1.8 million of that $4 million increase is in fact for the executive office building relayout I believe the award is expected. Tom, is that January?
Probably.
Yeah. So perhaps.
Hopefully.
Yeah, perhaps in January. That will bring that back for the third time, I believe, to this body. The other expenses are capacity studies, a general cargo, equipment expense associated with the radio technician and that work that we're bringing largely in-house, and some other cats and dogs, as they say.
Didn't we have the expense for the executive office building in last year's budget?
Yep. Yes, sir. Yeah. We did.
We had some issues with contracting. Yes, so.
Yeah. So we're just going to move it to this.
Yeah, we're just shifting.
Roll it over.
We've had to go out to the market a couple of times.
Yeah. Okay, page 10. Again, forgive me. It's a little busy, but the pie hopefully will get the point across. Just to give you hopefully an overview of the mix of expenses. When we talk about $307 million on the left, what is that? Again, same principle. Obviously, the big blue in this case is salary and benefits, represents 50% of our overall expenses, and the salary and benefits themselves are up 8%. Now, just to confuse more with the numbers, around two-thirds of that, about $100 million of that is PHA, and about $50 million of that is ILA, labor and benefits. But clearly the bulk of our expense lies in our people cost, including our labor partners. To the left, then, depreciation, around 24% of our expenses. Again, in general, all those projects will come before this board for approval in the coming year. Discretionary is just that. It's composed of all kinds: economic development support, events, consulting, equipment purchases, travel. Those items that each chief and department lead is responsible to manage. These are at their discretion. So it goes through significant scrutiny to get onto the budget, and then as those expenses come forward up to Tom and Roger, perhaps, they receive additional looks to make sure it's...
And some will be brought to the commission if the contract's over $50,000.
Yes. That's right. Thank you, Eric. Yes, those will come if they're 50 or above. And the commentary just talks a little bit about... I will take one moment on the final two bullets. Remember, I mentioned that expenses are growing in line with revenues, very important. But the second bullet up from the bottom, gross margin, which is what we manage very tightly, is watching to ensure that what the business returns to begin generating cash for us is at least flat. We like to maintain a gross margin rate, in this example, of somewhere between 35 and 40%. And that really, as the bullet speaks to, that reveals the efficiency of our operational spend. This is what Jeff and others manage very carefully and do a fantastic job for us. So gross margin is actually increasing from where we're going to end 2018 into 2019. So that's a very good story. Business is growing, that's gonna require expenses. Those expenses not growing as fast, so your gross margin is actually improving into 2019. So we're proud of that story. Similarly on G&A spend, again, now we're looking at the overhead piece such as meat. So this is measured largely as a percentage of revenue, and we're flat at about 14% of revenue from 2018 to 2019. The dollars are allowed to grow because it's going to require dollars to sustain that growth and to sustain the business and support our stakeholders. But from a percentage of revenue, we manage and plan that to be flat. So that's the expense story. Page 11, I won't spend time here. These are the numbers behind the graph that I led with earlier, behind total revenue, net income, and cash flow at the bottom. You see the net profit margin there, again, something we're monitoring, at 24% for 2019. Comes down a pinch from 2018, again, because of a loss of some of the net, the interest income I referenced, for example, going down or decreasing into 2019 is generating less total net income profit percentage. But I will note, and hope you'll see there, that it's flat at 24% from 2018 budget to 2019 budget, and that's something we watch very carefully. Yes, sir.
Just a note, because I meant to ask this earlier. This 2018 budget, that was the original budget?
Yes, that's original budget.
And then forecasting mid-year or whatever?
Yes.
So it's pretty pretty good job of budgeting.
Yeah, the revenue is fantastic. Again, Jeff drives, call it, 70-80% of that, and they are less than 1% off of their budget. So well done, Jeff and Ryan and his team. So it's great. It's great. Okay. And then headcount, page 12. I'll talk you through the slide just a bit. So the bars on the left, the top number, 653, represents approved headcount for 2017. And you can see how we ended there at 620 heads on record with 33 open positions. The 2018 column then, 669 approved, with 652 headcount as of September 30th and 17 or 18 open positions. Moving into 2019 then, you see we are proposing a total headcount of 703. If you look just to your right then, specifically the two rows that say approve existing open recs, and then the new recs that I referenced in the first narrative page of 33 new headcount. I can rattle those off if you would like, but 24 of those are in the maintenance operations. And then two also within operations, within gross margin, if you will, for Rich, one in GIS and one in licensing for channel development. So 26 of the 33 are in operations and operating expense. The other seven are within G&A.
So, Tim, Matt.
Sorry.
Maybe this question is to Jeff. When we go out for these new 33 positions, most of them are like crane mechanics, yes, technicians. Correct. Are we competitive in the market to make sure we're getting the quality people?
I'll let Paul speak to that.
Yes, we do. We do advertise. We do go to community colleges. Historically, it's a little more tricky to get electricians because, of course, the refiners around us are doing well. And it takes typically longer to find electricians, but we have gone to community colleges. We have do a good job with HR and advertising. It takes a little while to fill those positions, right, but we succeed in it.
And as a reminder, we had that we approved that study,
right,
the Mercer study, which was done to evaluate all of our positions. And I'm assuming that is about market.
A little bit above market.
Above market. Okay.
Do we get any from other ports who wants to relocate? Who's got the skills and the quality already?
I had some. I had some technicians that came from Savannah that used to work for GPA,
mm-hmm,
and they came here because family issues and stayed here for a while. They have since gone back to Savannah. But no, it doesn't happen often at all.
Yeah,
people
okay.
from West Coast, for instance, it doesn't happen often at all.
All right.
Were there other questions on that?
Yeah, in terms of the headcount.
Yes,
so this 703 does not include the contract labor.
Correct.
Right. So the contract labor that we do with ILA and
right.
Okay.
Right. Outside
that's
of that.
That's separate correct. Of that.
Yes.
Okay.
We carry the expense but not the headcount.
Okay.
Yes.
And that varies from month to month.
What generally what's that?
The last calculation I saw is around 300 full-time equivalents.
Okay.
So if you looked at the hours and divided that, it's roughly 300 ILA.
Is that about your understanding about how many guys that are working on a regular
basis? Yeah, that's how many we employ.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It doesn't include the gangs, that stevedores are hiring out of a local 24 to work the shift. That's how many people
work for us
terminal operations.
Okay.
And on any given day, there may be a total of 1,000 or so.
Okay.
Yes.
Based on the number of shifts.
Yep.
We're the largest ILA employer in the Port of Houston.
Yeah.
Okay.
Based on manhood.
Okay.
Okay. Very good. We're going to do a quick segue, Tom.
I'll
turn it to you.
Back in 2015, this board allowed us to establish an asset management program. It's a program that we knew that was not going to happen overnight. And you guys all were behind making sure we did it right and we moved forward. We had a little blip in year one, but we pulled that back in, and we've been doing in-house with Charlie and Eric and his group, and then a group, not that Eric Barron, and then a group of cross-functional people have been part of this as well. So we wanted to show you some of the pluses that have happened so far in this program. It is a long-term program to get us there. If you imagine how many assets we have and how old they are and how spread out they are. So I'm going to ask Charlie to give you a brief update on this last year's success of phase one of the processes, and a little quick where we're going, so that you can understand that what you authorized us to do is very important to us, and we are moving forward. It's just a lot of work, and it's going to take a while for us to get there. But the final results is what this organization needs.
Quick question before. So if you're going back, and notably you had, catching up is always harder,
mm-hmm.
But new stuff coming in, that being put into the system and managed on the front end?
Yes. Okay. And part of what Charlie's going to talk about today, those newer docks at Bayport are mm-hmm. in the process.
Okay.
So we're starting with docks, and then there's a bunch of different categories that, again, we decided we're doing this in-house. We right. went outside, spent some money, realized that we were just telling those people what we knew,
mm-hmm.
and we have the expertise to do it ourselves. It may take us a little longer, but we can do it the way we need to. But every asset at in the future will be part of this.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Commissioners, for the chance to share the Strategic Asset Management Program with you all. As you know, we are engaged in a very asset-intensive industry, and by any measure, we have several $1 billion worth of assets in our portfolio. As Tim's slide just showed, about 7% of our operating expense is related to asset management and taking care of the things we have. But asset management is bigger than that, and we can continually improve on that to make sure we have the things needed by operations to succeed in doing what they do. So the bottom line is how effective we use those assets, how they're available, how they meet the market needs directly related to our success in achieving both the legislative and the strategic goals of Port Authority. So as Tom mentioned, we've grouped all these assets into groups, and we have 10 of them. And we then prioritize those groups based on the potential for reduction of risk, improvement in level of service, or reduction in cost of service. And that's led us to focus on what makes us a port. That's the docks and the wharves. And that's where we've been spending most of our effort in the last 2 years, getting our arms around that to ensure more success. So the chart up on the screen shows the age of our wharves at 3 of our primary terminals. The average wharf at Bayport is 2010. The average wharf at Barber's Cut is 1983. And up here where we're at the Turning Basin, the average is 1946. That's pretty shocking. And the newest facility at the Turning Basin is actually Dock 32, which is 33 to 34 years old right now. That's the newest new wharf that we have. Now, you also see big capital programs where we go work on a dock. But we're not replacing the dock. There's still that older stuff in the dock. We only do parts of the asset. So there are a lot of hybrids where it might have been built in 104 years ago, but then there's also parts of it that are relatively new as we keep that work to keep that in service. So now we are nearing the completion of our 2018 work plan. By the end of the year, we completed 42 of the marine assets that were the higher priorities. In the end, we'll have completed 141, and as Tom mentioned, this is a multi-year program. We intend right now to have the marine assets, primarily the wharves and the docks, complete in the next 3 years. So the inspection cost of those programs to do the baselines, find out what's going on, we're spending about $1 million a year and intend to do so for the next 3 years. We're also starting two of the other categories. One is corrosion of steel structures in the water, which we have an amazing amount of steel assets, things like bulkheads and fenders and things. We're doing that planning proposed in the budget for 2019. We're also working on other risk factors with electrical distribution and communication systems, the fiber network, and getting better grasp on those and planning for this next year. Bottom line on the slide, just in the inspection and getting knowledge, we're spending about $2.2 million a year gaining knowledge in that portfolio, and we'll be doing so for a very, very long time. Next slide. This shows 15 assets that have been completed this year, and it shows the number of relative findings. Those 15 assets had 117 actions noted. Now, 72 of them are really small things, routine things that we need to do to take care of those. That was your car, that's replacing the tires, that's oil changes, just routine repetitive maintenance things, but we're organizing those, getting those into a work order system. But you'll also notice we have three priority issues. Those are at assets City Dock 21, 25, and 26. The program identified three very serious issues, but they're really small and we caught them early. So if this was cancer, we caught them at stage one before they got bad, before they kill the patient, before it gets worse. And we have taken those areas in partnership with operations out of service. And now we're working on fixing them where they're really small issues before they grew and became something bigger. That's the type of benefits we're getting out of the program. Improved planning and solving things before they get in worse condition. So with that, that's the quick overview of the asset management program goals for next year.
Charlie, how do you prioritize? So you've got, I understand the three priorities you're working on now, but the next group over of priority projects, how do you prioritize amongst the priority
projects? These are the actions that come out. These are the routines. These are things that are important to take care of. You can skip these and not cause a fatal flaw. If you skip these grow into these. These take things out of service. So the goal is to keep everything down on this side.
But when you go to, all right, so you got, you're at Northside Turning Back, you're in City Dock 21.
Yep.
You're working on the priority problem, but you also have five priorities and nine routine. You do them all while you're there at the dock?
As many as you can for economy of scale, absolutely. But also, importantly, a lot of these issues across docks are the same. You do big groups together and be part of the goal. Rather than going and painting one bulkhead, we might paint nine and figure out how to get some big groupings up.
So the theory is not necessarily to do everything at 21 and you're done with it, then move on to the next one.
It's all value-based. That's right.
If I can interrupt. There's a conversation between operations and our maintenance crew, which does some of these the pieces, and then project and construction management, which, you know, if it's a big repair and we need to contract an outside cement company or something like that. So, you know, there's practicalities that have to be balanced and traded off. So it just depends on what operations is saying is a priority for business, and then what maintenance can do, and then what maintenance can't do.
You're going to have to go get it.
And you have to remember, an asset management program and why we established this was, historically, we fix things as they broke. We need to know what we have, what condition it is, and then be able to prioritize so that I'm not spending money on Dock 12 when Dock 12 is gone. We shouldn't spend any more money. We should build 33. We don't have those facts today. The ultimate goal of asset management is the group sitting that brings you guys the decision to spend money is done with everything in mind, being able to prioritize where we're spending our money so we spend it efficiently,
right?
Not just fixing something because it broke. Well, maybe it's broken, it doesn't need to be fixed because we don't need that dock anymore. That's where we're going, and that's why we have to take the time now to get the assessments done so that we can have all of it in one bucket and then make the right decisions.
Put it another way, it's going to help our capital budgeting immensely.
Seriously.
Well, it seems to me, and I know y'all got a plan for this, but for us it would be very helpful, say this time next year, or at some point for y'all to tell us, okay, this is what we've identified, this is what we're going to knock out this year. And then bring us, because this is helpful, but it's not real specific about what you're fixing.
You mean a list of, actual projects?
Yes. CDOT 21, we identified these three priorities. We knocked out 21, 23, and 24. And we've done, you know, just kind of, we helped me to get a grasp on where you guys are going.
We will keep you updated. You just approved a month ago or so to continue this program into phase two. So we will give you a report when phase one's completely done of everything that happened in phase one. We'll tell you what we're doing in phase two. And then as that gets completed, we'll tell you where we're going with that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Because it would just be helpful to me to be able to kind of press this.
Because but we you get have these things
here, piecemeal on various situations.
You have here in 2019, 16 wharves and one bridge that you're going to be working on, right?
Yes, sir.
So I'm assuming that's included in the budget that we
absolutely.
Just
correct. Yes. So, correct. And those projects were picked based on priority.
Yeah, and those are listed in the back of the budget. Right. So if you want to know what they are here and what we're going to, what they'll be working on.
Yes.
But we'll get you a list.
Yeah.
So that we can make that clear.
Thank you, Charlie, Rich. Okay, back two slides and we'll be through with 2019.
Okay.
Charles, we have an issue there.
Yeah, because it's a software update that's required.
Okay. And I'm thankful for software updates. Don't get me wrong.
And you guys continue to talk about slides.
Okay, absolutely. Slide 18.
Get the guy behind the curtain.
Slide 18, gentlemen. Slide 18 in your handouts there speaks to the capital budget for 2019 of $287 million. 72% or just over $200 million of that are what we label strategic projects. And largely, those are capacity additions and enhancements at the container terminals. You'll remember we have moved BCT Wharf 3, which is alone with its cranes, well over $90 million. Bayport, some interesting work going there with strengthening of docks 4 and 5 in order to move and or place some taller cranes there. Container Yard 2 at Bayport, some rail and some work on Bayport South. All that is comprehended in the 206. Recapitalization, fairly self-explanatory, but these are primarily projects at the Turning Basin and a few things at Barber's Cut as well. For instance, Care Fenders and Manchester 2 are within this $49 million. Channel projects in this context for 2019 are largely maintenance dredge activities at our own berths throughout the channel, about 17 of the 19, and then a couple of million left for ditching of placement areas and other cost share responsibilities of $19 million. Other projects are just that, largely maintenance equipment for about $7 million and around $4 million for some container optimization, efficiency moves, and RFID and GPS. So that's a high-level look at the $287 million of capital for next year, largely unchanged from what we presented in July.
Is moved in. Any of the capital money coming from the federal government?
There are about $1 million to $2 million of grant monies included in here for port security grants and reefers at Bayport. It doesn't go into the capital dollars itself because we book it down below the line. But mm-hmm. The short answer is yes. There's a little bit of federal grant money comprehended here.
Okay.
And we don't book anything in our budget unless we actually know we have the grant.
Right.
So I know Rich's group is always looking for more grants for mm-hmm. some of our projects. But even if we're working on getting a grant for $5 million, we're not going to put it in here if we don't know we actually have it.
Okay.
Right. Okay, slide 19. Finally, then, all this is a roll forward, if you will, of liquidity. You see the 2018 column there. We expect around $360 million available to us during 2018 for award of capital projects. Then you see the net use is $165 million. So this, we had approved $275 million in capital awards for 2018. Looks like we'll end up around $165. The bulk of that being Barber's Cut Wharf 3 and cranes moving into 2019. So again, the way to read that, at the end of 2018, we anticipate having around $194 million of funds available for future project awards by this board. 2019, then, staying at the bottom line, $287 million of net uses. That's the capital plan I referenced, and ending with a projected $78 million, and then 2020 ending with around $36. As you'll see briefly on the five-year plan, that is the lowest point we'll reach on our available funds. There's an agenda item coming up with regards to authorizing the note purchase program update that we'll talk about in just a few minutes to give us a little bit of backstop, a little bit of line of credit to award against should we need it.
So in 2020 is where we really, well, actually, yeah, 2020, but 2019 is where we really need to start looking at where we're going in terms of additional capital money that we will need to continue our capital plan.
Correct. At this point, again, assuming authority to execute the revolving note program, our operating cash shows to be sufficient to fund our capital plans, absent any major Houston Ship Channel widening or deepening project. So this says we have sufficient resources, Commissioner, mm-hmm. although it dips down to the $36 million in 2020. But again, as schedules change, cost estimates change, that will continue. You know how we've told
right.
you a couple of years,
right.
it tends to slide a bit.
I guess I'm looking at, because I mean 2020 would be the next of probably most optimum time for us to look at, you know, seeking additional bond funds in the ability to be able to grow and develop, you know, beyond that
yeah,
point.
I think when we get into the 5-year
yeah,
plan,
yeah.
we're going to take a little.
Why don't you go? Why don't you go to there real quick?
Yeah, you want
go to 25. If you go to page 25, you'll see that.
Well, that's in the next presentation.
Yeah,
it is.
Can we finish
this?
Defer that discussion?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Good
until
point.
Until we get to the next agenda item.
Because, to your point, Mr. Kennedy, that includes the presentation of the 2019 operating and capital budget. So okay. I would entertain any questions or however you'd like to move forward.
Okay, Commissioners, do
yeah,
you have,
I only have
questions?
One.
Yes, sir.
Going back to the automobiles.
Yes, sir.
Did you say that the automobile imports is going to decrease, but rail increase, is that domestic cars coming into our facilities?
Jeff
yes.
or John, you want to
with the cars coming across the dock from the ship is expected to decrease, is what VW is telling us. They'll
yeah.
they'll continue to grow that rail.
Right. Be coming in
from
by
Mexico.
Rail.
Yes.
From Mexico.
So the port makes its revenue off of leasing the facility to the company?
And we have a surcharge on those rail cars.
So we get
yes.
part of the rail car costs.
Yes.
Right. Yes. Okay.
Exactly right.
And overall, we have a rail car surcharge. We have a vehicle charge for everyone that comes by rail and uses that facility.
Okay.
And as you know, I'm just going to add, I mean, Volkswagen has had some business challenges the last few years, so I'm sure that's impacted some of their volume. Yeah.
Right.
Sure.
Right. Okay.
The lease is up next year, so we'll
yes. Okay, Commissioner Gadon, Carlos, anything further?
Ask my.
Okay. Well, my thoughts are we appear to be in excellent shape. That's reflective of not only the growth in our business, but the efficiency of the operation that staff is pursuing. So, staff, thank you. From what I can see, it appears you're doing a great job. I appreciate the asset management work that's been done and would love to see that continue down the road through the years. Thank you for the clarity of the presentation. The visuals are very helpful and the explanation is exemplary. So with that, I'll take a motion on agenda item one, consideration and possible action regarding the proposed fiscal year 2019 operating and capital budget.
Motion.
Is there a second? Motion and a second. All in favor, say aye, please.
Aye.
Motion passes, so the 2019 budget is on the books. Very good, thank you.
Good.
Thank you.
Okay, moving along to agenda item D2, staff briefing, discussion, and possible action regarding the proposed five-year operating and capital plan that we were trying to get into a moment ago.
Yes, sir. And we'll be brief here. This does not require a vote or approval as much as acknowledgement of the five-year plan. We'll see if the graphic is effective. It turned out a little busier than we had hoped. But page 21 gives you the same overview of the income statement for the 5 years. We'll just talk about a couple of rows on this, which is the proverbial top line of revenue. You see, again, beginning in 2019 with the $404 million, which is growing 8% over 2018. And then cast your eyes to the right as you watch the revenue grow. Notice the declining rate of growth, as of course you get a tough compare, as they say in finance terms, but your growth slowing just a bit. That's around a 4.5% compound annual growth rate, or CAGR, 4.5% over that 5 years. So very respectable growth, ending in around 3% as we get to 2023, which is more of a regional state GDP expectation. So that feels like a responsible look at revenue. And then if you look at the green bar, that is now we're looking at operations only. That's the operating cash flow generated to the business, again, to return to our capital plan. You can see that growing from 172 in 2019, projected to $214 million 2023. So it's a solid plan. Operating income, if you'll note the blue line, slides just a bit as we see the investment in capital resources, capital assets beginning to pull down that overall profitability rate. And that's why the cash look is so important, to show that, again, our quality of our earnings, if you will, continue to improve as we grow the business. So that's a quick snapshot of the five-year plan. I'll go all the way now to slide 23, which Commissioner Branch speaks to your liquidity point. So perhaps oversimplified, but all you have here in blue are the capital plans for each of those years. You'll note 2019 at 287, that's the plan we just approved for 2019, $287 million. Cumulative over the five-year horizon is just over $900 million of capital requirements to sustain and grow our business. This is relatively consistent. We were just a little bit higher when we spoke to you in July in the capital workshop, but is fairly similar. The green bar then are the available funds at the end of each period. In other words, if we looked at 2020, we can execute $217 million of capital awards and exit the year with $36 million still available to award in the future. Well, remember, then we're going to generate, call it $200 million in cash in 2021. And so your green bar now starts to grow as your capital plan begins to ease in as we complete a lot of the capacity additions and rework at the container terminals. That begins to get into the kind of $150, $150 million range. Assuming business volumes hold, economies hold, we should continue to generate between $150 and $200 million of cash flow on an annual basis. So that's the point, Commissioner Branch, that this admittedly high-level look indicates that we have sufficient resources to fund the capital plans as we've laid out in this five-year horizon.
And almost to a point where it's too much in terms of the liquidity when you get out to 2023. However, if you look at the capital plan, the turning basin does not have the numbers that we think ultimately from the asset management program that we're going to have to spend here. But we didn't want to just throw money into a budget without knowing what it is. So, you know, if I look at this from the outside and I see you're going to have $262 million liquidity at 23, I'm saying, you know, that's too much. But it's not going to be there. If you look at the actual numbers on 24, for the turning base. And when you get out to 21, it's 3.7 million, 6.7 million. Those numbers aren't even close to what it's going to be. But we don't know what it is. And so we're not just going to throw numbers out there.
Right.
We will get, as we get closer to those years, we will fine tune this. And that number will come down, but we will still have the money that we need to carry out our capital plan for at least the next 5 years.
Without bonds.
Without bonds. If we don't get this mega study that all of a sudden Rich comes in and says, I need $600 million.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say.
That will hurt us a little.
That's what I was going to say. These numbers don't contemplate or anticipate any deepening, widening.
Correct.
Or major expenditures due to something that's coming through our master planning for 2040 program.
Right.
There may be some major rehabs along the lines of what Thomas talking about, around the turning base and redevelopment.
Right.
But it's clear that if the fantasy happens and the Corps comes in and says, hey, we're going to do the deal, we've got the money, got the federal part of it, we're going to have to go, obviously that's enough money, we're going to have to go get bonds.
Correct.
How much time will we have when the feds say, or do we know, when the feds say it's a go? Because we all know it takes, a year to get a bond issue put together.
Well, first they have to authorize it.
Yeah, right. Authorization
is... So there'll be a gap between the authorization and the appropriation, and presumably that's when we'll be putting our arrangements into place.
Wouldn't expect authorization prior to 2020.
Yeah, and that's pretty, I would say that's probably optimistic.
You're
right.
At best case.
Yeah.
Yep. But we have a reasonably good idea of what we're talking about in the way of cost, I'm assuming.
Yes,
we
do.
But it depends on how far up.
Yes.
We had the discussion on the two-way traffic, how far up they're letting us, going to let us widen it.
And
who pays for it?
Right. Yeah, the other variable is who pays for it.
Right.
We're looking into every option possible to raise money for the local share.
Right. I mean, if they decide that they're only going to be taken care of to a point, and we decide as stewards of the Port of Houston, then that's a different problem.
There's some options that we're continuing to consider that may warrant an update to the commission, about options that we go. In completion of the study and move it forward with.
It would just make sense for us to be ready. And just about ready to go when we get the
Spencer's line. Going to address a little more of this.
So we still have the $100 million line of credit standing by?
That's on the list. We're going to talk about that next agenda. Okay, that concludes the five-year update.
Okay, so
required.
Approval required.
No.
So there's no approval required. Should we endorse or anything, or just take it as a briefing? We'll take it as a briefing and discussion.
Okay.
Yes. Moving along to agenda item D3, approve execution and adoption of resolutions, agreements, and documents necessary to give effect to a new $100 million senior lien variable rate revolving note program, including authorization to A, incur borrowings under such financing, B, incur rating agency fees, commitment fees, legal fees, paying agent fees, financial advisory fees, and other costs relating to the program in an amount not to exceed $1 million for the period through December 31st, 2019, and C, in addition to the cost, incur applicable interest cost relating to borrowings thereunder. The mouthful.
Can you read that again?
I missed.
I think Mr. Yee are you presenting this item, Mr. Yee? Who's presenting it?
Either of us could. Ray, do you want to go?
Ray looked like he was in pot form.
You may recall 3 years ago we had approval for a $300 million line of credit.
Right.
And in the course of looking at renewing that facility, we received three unsolicited proposals which when we decided to review them with along with our financial advisors and legal counsel that are here this morning, we found that one of the proposals seemed very attractive, and that was the one with Regions Bank. So that is the one that we're proposing for a $100 million line instead of the previous $300 million line. Just in case we need interim liquidity for any unforeseen events, or there may be other opportunities for capital infrastructure projects. So this is just to have interim liquidity. It's a five-year program. The commitment fees on this facility are much reduced compared to the previous one. We were paying about $1 million previously, annually, just to have that $300 million line. In this facility, it'll be much less than $100,000 annually. Now, the costs that are in your RCA are for, you know, legal fees and so on that we may incur, just in case the next step with the Texas Attorney General, if they require additional changes to the facility and the documents, the agreements, then that may incur additional, you know, legal costs. But at this point, you know, we're asking for approval to proceed along these lines, and all of the documents have been prepared, but they're not finalized depending on, you know, the approval process with the Texas Attorney General. Any comments from, we have Trey Cash from Masterson Advisors and Jonathan Frells from Bracewell, who have assisted us in this process. Any questions?
Okay, how about commissioners? You have questions?
Motion.
Okay, motion to approve.
Second.
I have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Agenda item 3 passes. Okay, agenda item E1 has been tabled and removed from the agenda. Then we have agenda item F1, approve increases in Port Authority tariff charges, including dockage, wharfage, throughput charges, container storage rates, container crane and private crane rental rates, water hookup rates, freight handling rates, and miscellaneous other tariff charges at amounts equal to the lower of the increase in the Consumer Price Index average for the 12-month period ending July 2018, or the increase in the index average for the 12-month period ending October 2018, as published by the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, such increased charges to be included and published in Port Authority Tariffs Numbers 8, 14, 15, effective January 1st, 2019. Okay, another long one there.
You can read it again.
No, I think you all understood it fully as a discussion.
Motion. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? None. Agenda item F1 passes. Don't believe we have an executive session on this agenda.
Correct.
So just announce that our next meeting is on Wednesday, December the 12th. That's a different date and time than we normally see. On Wednesday, December the 12th. That's at 9 a.m. or 10 a.m.? 9 a.m.?
9 a.m.
Okay. So you're all invited back to that meeting.
We will remind you.
With that, this meeting is adjourned.